Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Tragic Rugby League Report. It's just me for tonight, Declan McCutcheon. Zach and Rutkin both couldn't make it tonight. Rutkin is still up on the Gold Coast working on, I believe, it's AJ Brenton's hamstring, but I have an update saying that he has worked his way up to the groin area for AJ Brenton, so take that what you will. And obviously, South Sydney lost on the weekend, so Zach refused to come on the podcast. So, read into that what you will as well. So, just me for tonight. To be honest, bit of a quiet weekend. Besides, obviously, my West Tigers being on absolute fire, unfortunately, and not in a good way, burning on fire in terms of the village, everything coming down. So, we'll get a little bit into that. Don't want to get into too much, just purely because we want to save that for the West Tigers podcast, which is recorded tomorrow night, where we'll probably go more into depth for it. But yeah, it's an interesting and rough time for me, to say the least, to start the season, but that's all right. And also, if you haven't followed us already on Instagram and Facebook, it's Tragic Rugby League on Instagram and Facebook as well, so we'd really appreciate it if you hit it a like. And thank you for everyone who's viewed the podcast recently, or for everyone that's new onto the podcast. I think we've been hitting over 1,000 weekly lessons for this podcast for the first time. So thank you to all the new people, and thank you to the people that have also been with us to start the journey as well. We really appreciate it, and it just means the world to me, Zach and Rutkin, that people actually want to listen to us jibber on about rugby league, which always surprises me, to be honest, but thanks for that nonetheless. So let's see. So obviously it was an amazing weekend of football. I mean, I think a few people have come out and said that this is probably the highest quality of rugby league across the board that has been seen in a very, very long time. And I can't really disagree. I mean, there hasn't, besides the Tigers, obviously, which we will get into in a little bit, every single team has improved. Even teams like the Warriors, they've been really fun to watch. Teams like the Knights, even without Ponga, they've had some really good results. Bulldogs have come a long way. The Dolphins are obviously a real class story this season, and it's really great to see them doing well. So there's been a lot of good footy played, and there's not really a lot of teams that you could say have really gone backwards. I suppose you could make the argument that, well, the Tigers are probably the same position they were last year, but I think the Raiders are like a team that also sticks out as going backwards as well. But yeah, it's been really good to see such high quality footy. So yeah, obviously, I think one of the biggest off-field incidents at the moment would be the West Tigers CEO, Justin Pascoe, has come into the limelight with some of his conduct before and during the defeat to the Brisbane Broncos up there at Suncorp. So I think I don't want to spend too much time on this because, I think it's been a little bit overblown. And it's probably such a big story because the Tigers are obviously struggling. They're 0-5 at the moment. And I think once any club is 0-5 to start a season for the second time in 2 years, I think anything anyone does within the club is going to be examined with a microscope. But I still think it's important to talk about it. So just for context, I have had a little bit to do with Justin Pascoe over my time with the West Tigers podcast, where it be interviewing him for the Ambush as well. And he just seems like a really nice guy. Personally, I quite like him. But I think in this situation, I don't necessarily have a problem with him going on the field and kicking the ball around before kickoff. He said it was 2 hours before the boys started warming up. So if that's the case, yes, it's not a great look. But I suppose when you understand the context of it, it becomes less of a big deal for me. I understand that. Is it great for your CEO to be dressed in a polo top and joggers and trackies? Probably not. I don't think it's great. It comes back to when things aren't going really well for you, the media is just going to compound everything and really come down on the club, which is what they've done. But I do have a bit of a problem with him being caught on the phone during halftime. It's just such a bad look for the club, isn't it? It's just so unprofessional. And I understand that he is definitely not an unprofessional person, but I just think it's people like to say, sometimes the optics become the reality at a certain point. And when people see that the CEO of the West Tigers is you know, on his phone at halftime during the time when Tim Sheens is speaking. I think that just shows, it paints the club in a really unprofessional light. And it's just something that could so easily be avoided. I mean, I remember Brett Camoli last season was caught yawning at halftime when they were getting absolutely thrashed against the Roosters. And it's just a horrible look. Like, I think these people need to realise that there are cameras everywhere in these change rooms these days. And, you know, I think they're talking on Triple M that, you know, not only do they see them, like, not only do people see them when it's live on TV, but I think Fox and Triple M, they also have access to the cameras even when, like, things aren't live panned to the change room. So you're just, like, there's just cameras on you all the time. And to be honest, like, you just got to, like, avoid that sort of stuff. So, like, the on-field kicking the ball, I think it's an awkward look, but it's not the worst. But, yeah, I think the phone and the camera, I think it's just a bad look, isn't it? And it just sends the wrong message to, I think, particularly the fans that, you know, there's an element of him not being interested in it. And I'm sure that's the farthest thing from the truth. I'm sure he's, you know, as he said in the Buzz Rothfield article, I'm sure he's, like, staring at the wall at night, trying to find ways how to fix it, but it's just not looking good, is it? And it's a poor look for the club and a really poor start to the season. And, yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what the Tigers do from here, to be honest. But as I said before, we've discussed this topic at length from the West Tigers podcast. And if there's any Tigers fans out there, I highly recommend watching the latest edition of the West Tigers podcast, where I believe Joe, Steve, Eddie and Gary went quite in depth with the whole situation, and obviously don't want to stand on their toes. So yeah, I highly recommend you guys check out that episode if you want a little bit more of a debate or a little bit more of a discussion on, you know, Pasco, the board and the whole Tigers kind of situation and state of play at the moment, because, you know, lots to talk about, because, you know, plenty of fires in, like, different areas, so it's very, very interesting. But I just thought I'd also talk about the team as a whole at the moment. As much as it's easy to blame it on someone like Pasco or someone like Tim Sheens, I do think it's a little bit more complex at the moment, because, you know, it's called a footy club for a reason. It's not just one person when clubs struggle, and I think this is a perfect situation where, like, guys like Pasco, guys like Tim Sheens have come under the spotlight, and rightfully so. I think the criticism of particularly Pasco is, I think it's warranted to an extent, because he's been at the club for a long time, and, you know, when you start looking at some of the things that went wrong under his watch, I think you know, you have to take note of some of it. But with Tim Sheens, I do kind of feel a little bit bad on one hand, because if you just look at how the team's playing, it's just impossible to, like, not put it down to individual players kind of missing their assignments. But then you look back on letting Jackson Hastings go a year early from his contract to get Clemmer and to put Brooks at seven, even though we've known that Brooks isn't a seven for so, so long. That really stings, from my opinion, as a West Tigers fan. I really wanted to keep Jackson Hastings as halfback. At least, even if you didn't think he was a long-term seven at the club, you know, you can keep someone, you know, short to medium term. So we could have just kept him for 2023, said, look, you can play 13, Luke Brooks is going to be the seven, and then we could have kept him on contract, because he was on contract with us for 2023, and he'd probably be playing seven now. And then, I don't know, maybe give him a one-year extension, two-year extension. I'm not sure if that's realistic, if the Knights were trying to get him so aggressively. But, you know, it just seems like they had so many options. They had Jock Madden, like, coming off contract end of last year as well, who they could have potentially had some flexibility with. But, you know, that's on Tim Sheens. He's the one who chose Luke Brooks, and I think he's the one that's discovered that it wasn't just Madge's coaching that was the problem with him. I think he's got a lot of holes in his game in terms of being a pure halfback that it's going to be really hard to overcome for the rest of the season, if I'm being completely honest. So from that perspective, I completely understand why everyone's really annoyed at the club and Tim Sheens in particular, because, you know, at the time, I just remember being absolutely shocked that they were going to let Hastings go, because we didn't even look like winning a game last year until he was in the team. So, you know, and as much as, you know, everyone wants Luke Brooks to do well, like, sometimes you are what you are, and he's been in the league for, you know, over 200 games now. You know, he's not a rookie. He kind of is what he is at this moment. And what he is at the moment is he's pretty much, if he's not running the ball well, then he can't really impact the game to what the Tigers need him to at the moment. And it's not like, as I said before, you know, there's more than one fire at the moment, I feel, and it's 100% not just Luke Brooks's fault. I feel like I want to go out of my way to kind of make that clear that it's definitely not his fault 100% or Tim Sheens's fault 100%. Like, for example, I feel like I was huge on Adam Dewey last season going into this season because I thought he was the best ball runner at the club, and it just feels like that's went completely out the door for him this season. As sad as it is for me to admit that, I know he's got the turf toe, but when you take that field, you know, you kind of have to waive the excuse that you have an injury and perform to your best of your ability. And I just don't think he's came. There's something up. It's weird. I'm not sure if it's a mental thing or if it's a coaching thing, or he just doesn't look as comfortable as he did before in terms of his running game, because he was always an awkward passer, I must say. It never looked completely natural to me, but he always had that running game to rely on, and honestly, that looks gone. But for the Easter Monday game, they've dropped Brandon Wakeham, they put Adam Dewey to the bench, and they put Adam Dewey to 5'8", and they've put Luke Brooks back to 7, and honestly, it does feel like kind of shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit, because, you know, I feel very bad for Wakeham, considering last week he was quoted as saying that Tim Sheens was going to give this Spence stability going forward and that he wasn't going to change it. But on the other hand, I do understand it, because, you know, Adam Dewey, by all accounts, was very bad against the Broncos at fullback. And as I said before, I don't 100% completely blame him for all of it, because he probably did train most of the year at 5'8", as opposed to fullback in the preseason. So it's a very big ask to make someone jump from 6 to fullback, and, you know, it did look like he was struggling to find that position. So he's back at the number 6 jersey, Luke Brooks still at the 7 jersey, to the dismay of lots of Tigers fans. But, you know, it just, where do they go from here? It's tough, isn't it? They just gotta ride it out, as sad as it is to say, because, you know, unless they manage to sign someone like from outside the club, and we all know how hard it is to attract a top quality halfback in the NRL, let alone an average halfback, to be honest, especially you know, mid season, let alone a year in advance, which is when all these guys are signing their contracts. So it's just a nightmare at the moment. I mean, you know, Mitchell Pearce, I don't know, I do have my problems with that one. I feel like he left to go to Catalans, you know, and that felt like a bit of a swan song contract for him. To come back to the NRL, he'd have to be mental, especially with the Tigers. I keep coming back to that whenever someone like George Williams, I think Sean Johnson was throwing up a suggestion. I just, the way the Tigers are at the moment, I just couldn't see any 7 coming in and thinking that they were, you know, a good chance of turning this around, because the negativity around the club, around the fan base, is probably as bad as I've ever seen it in recent memory. So, but then what do you do? Because you can't really go with Luke Brooks and Adam Dewey at the moment. It's just insanity to keep going with it. But that's the, unfortunately, we keep coming back to Tim Sheens' decision to back Luke Brooks at the start of the year, or the end of last year, sorry. And it's just really limited what they can do, to be honest, because, you know, like, if Hastings or Jock Madden were still at the club now, either of them would be the starting 7. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I know it's only speculation, but I think we all know it to be true. So, obviously, the Tigers have got a lot of rebuilding to do, unfortunately. I think when everyone saw that they managed to beef up that forward pack, you know, it looked like they were finally going to turn things around. They signed Afi Korsau, you know, an Origin-level hooker, but the rest of the members of that spine just haven't lived up to expectation this year. And I don't see that changing for the rest of the year, unfortunately, as negative as that is to sound. But moving on to something more positive, or not depending on like which part of the rugby league war you're a part of. So anyone that's listened to the podcast, I do have a soft spot for rugby. It's one that's not shared by Zach. I think Rutkin is also a little bit into the Wallabies when they play, which is good to hear. I do find it quite interesting when you see the kind of, you would say, political lines between rugby and rugby league. A lot of the time, I think it just it comes down to who has the broadcast rights for rugby. So, for example, I don't really think you would see NRL 360 giving rugby as much of a tough time as they are at the moment if they had the rights like they have in the previous years for the Super Rugby, for the Rugby Championship and for the World Cup. So I think that kind of gives them a license to kind of lash the sport. But then on the other hand, I really am a little bit disappointed in rugby when they use terms to describe rugby league personalities or rugby league opinions as thuggish. I think it was Greg Horn has also said that, you know, why would Joseph Solihull pick rugby league? Because they just play in Campbelltown and, you know, Wollongong, and he can play in France if he plays for the Wallabies. I think that's a real elitist, you know, perspective. I think rugby, well, in New South Wales anyway, from my experience, it really doesn't connect with the grassroots level anywhere except for the eastern suburbs and, you know, some kind of areas like that in the inner west, I suppose. It really does need to do a better job of reaching Western Sydney and the corresponding areas, like I feel rugby league has done such a good job of doing. So, you know, a bit disappointed about rugby's comments from that perspective, but, you know, I think this is, I think it's good to see a little bit of a heartbeat for the Wallabies. It's good to see all this excitement, and it's good to see this all in correlation with the arrival of Eddie Jones. And for anyone that doesn't know much about Eddie Jones, I think you're going to hear a lot more about him in the media, like, going forward, especially coming closer to that Lions series in 2025, because he's someone that he's very knowledgeable, he's very charismatic, and he knows how to get a media headline. And for that reason, I think he's good for the Wallabies. Whether that will lead to success on the field, I do have my questions about, I'm not going to lie. It seems like he's one of those kind of old school Michael Maguire coaches that can rub the kind of new age player in the wrong way. If you look at his time at England, he had tremendous success early on in England. He got them to a World Cup final, but by the end of it, it did look like his tactics had kind of worn thin, and it looked like the English rugby were pretty happy to see him go. You know, rightly or wrongly, I'm not too sure about that, but yeah, that just seems to be the case from an outside point of view. But I'm glad he's back in Australian rugby. Hopefully they don't beat Scotland, but you know, it is what it is. But I think Australian rugby does need someone like Eddie Jones to come back and revitalise them. And obviously Joseph Suoliti signed with the Wallabies from 2025 on reportedly $1.6 million a year for 3 years, which is definitely a fair wicket. We went into depth about the signing on last week's episode, so check that out if you want to hear a little bit more about what me and Zach thought about Joseph Suoliti signing with the Wallabies. But it's interesting, on 100% Footy on Monday night, I think it was Danley Widler, he identified some other players that they believe are on Eddie Jones's rugby league hit list to convert to a union. So I don't know if this is solid information or it's a little bit of speculation, but I just thought it would be interesting to go through just to see if I think this player could transition to rugby, what position I could see them playing, and the likelihood if it's actually going to happen. So I know Zach's not going to like this, and he's probably going to block this out, but so the first person on the list is Cam Murray. Obviously, he was a rugby boy from Newington back in the day. I think he won a GPS title, captain in the school, so he's got a little bit of pedigree around the game of rugby. I think he'd be an amazing player at rugby. I could see him as a 12, the same position that Sam Burgess and Sonny Bill Williams played. I think to play that position, or to play any position in rugby union, you've got to have a low centre of gravity, but still be able to keep that power and that leg drive. And I think that's what kind of separates Cam Murray from a lot of league players, that he's got that kind of low centre of gravity, but he's so strong and he's so skillful as well. So he'd add a little bit of playmaking to that 12 jersey for the Wallabies. So I reckon he could walk into any rugby union team at the moment. He's got that much talent. And he's also got a motor on him as well, so he'd be very busy in the midfield, and I reckon he could be really, really good for the Wallabies. In terms of if I think this is going to happen, I think that it's probably long odds, because I think Cam Murray is contracted to the Bunnies for the next few years, and I think if you're going to make the transition now, I think you should make it as early as possible just to give yourself enough run-in time. Obviously, the World Cup's not till 2027, so if that's the timeline, he's still got a little bit of time. But in terms of the Lions tour, like, you'd probably want to make the transition as soon as possible, which is why I was a little bit surprised that Suoliti took up his option to stay at the Roosters in 2024, because if I was in his corner, I'd be saying, look, if you want to make this work, you have to give it as much time as possible, because we saw players like Sam Burgess just give it kind of 1 year in terms of a time frame, and then if it wasn't 100% working, you know, we see them kind of give up. But I think that you've got to give yourself more than one season just to give it a real crack. And I think that for Cam Murray, it's good. Like, it's hard to tell what he's thinking at the end of his contract. I think he's got 2 or 3 more years. So, yeah, maybe if the South Sydney were to win a comp in the next few years, I could see that happening because he's ticked that box. He's played for Australia. He's won Origin Series. And I think that NRL Premiership for the Bunnies is probably that last thing that he's trying to chase at the moment. So I would probably say unlikely, but not impossible. So I'm going to sit on the fence for that one. And then the next one, which was a little bit of a surprise to me, but it makes complete sense because I think he'd be very good at fly half, is Nathan Cleary. Now, everyone's probably going to think that, you know, Nathan Cleary, why would he even consider going to rugby? And I think that that's also what I thought, kind of talking about it before with some mates. But I do believe that there are some interesting kind of prospects for him for a code switch. For example, I think around the 2023 World Cup, the Wallabies actually nearly recruited Andrew Johns, according to Eddie Jones. And I think for players that have achieved, you know, everything in the game, as Nathan Cleary has at the age of 25, I mean, his achievements are just amazing when you think about it for someone who's still pretty young as well. He's won a premiership, he's won an Origin Series, he's played for Australia, and I think the allure of maybe the next challenge in terms of transition into rugby, I think that does intrigue the great players in terms of, like, to challenge themselves. And then on top of that, you introduce the fact that if he does well in the Wallabies market, that will turn him in to from an Australian sporting icon to having a much more of a international application for marketability. So because rugby, it's very big in France, it's very big in England, it's very big in the Northern Hemisphere. And if you look at someone like Sonny Bill Williams, like, he was an amazing player in league, but it wasn't until he started playing for the All Blacks that he started to get a much bigger profile in terms of being a world-respected athlete. And I think Nathan Cleary, he would absolutely fill that bill as well, to be honest, because he's very marketable. I have no doubt that he can make the transition to rugby. He's got a great kicking game, which is half the battle for a fly half. But then he's also got that creativity with ball in hand as well. And I think he would do really well in the tactics and in rugby. He reminds me, if I was to give him a player example, I think I would go Owen Farrell from the England and Saracens rugby team. I think that, you know, Nathan Cleary, I think it's kind of overlooked. He's got a little bit of size on him. He's to throw around. He's probably not like a very elusive player, but when he runs, I think it's his strength that gets him over the gain line and his smarts as well to know when to run. And I think that reminds me a lot of Owen Farrell. So I reckon he definitely could make the transition. In terms of if I think he will, I think that, you know, he's pretty entrenched at Penrith at the moment, especially since his dad is coaching. I think that would be an interesting conversation at the dinner table, wouldn't it? About him potentially ditching the Penrith Panthers, who are trying to make a dynasty at the moment in terms of, you know, premiership. So I can't see it happening, to be honest. It would have to be like, because if you think that if Joseph Suoliti is making $1.6 million, that how much do you have to give Nathan Cleary to jump ship? It does beg the question, doesn't it? Because, like, Nathan Cleary is definitely a more valuable player to the Wallabies than someone like Joseph Suoliti. And that's no disrespect to him, but, you know, Nathan Cleary, he's got the runs on the board, from my opinion. So that'll be interesting. And then the next one on the list is Matt Barton. And Matt Barton, I think he's one of those guys that when he played consistent first grade at the Panthers, he showed he could play multiple positions. And I think that that's probably going to be the same for rugby. I find it kind of hard to pin him to a particular position because I think he could play fly half, 12. He could probably also pick himself at 13 as well. He's got all the attributes. He's a great runner of the ball. He's got his passing game. It's a little bit like Adam Dury. It's probably not the most natural aspect of his game, but he's just so athletic and quick that he can make up for it, in my opinion. But I suppose if you want to look at, like, Matt Barton's biggest strength, it's probably that boot on him. So, like, you would say maybe fly half, because your kicking game in rugby is so, so important, and you honestly just need to win the territory battle. And someone like Matt Barton, he could just bomb the back three in any, you know, international team all day, and it would be so hard for them to defuse those towering bombs. So I could really see him as a 12 or a 10, but I think I'm leaning to 10 at the moment. And in terms of if it will happen, I doubt it, because, you know, he was only recently off contract, and it didn't really seem like he engaged too much with the idea of going to Super Rugby or playing for the Wallabies. So I'm not sure if much will have changed by the next time he comes off contract, but that'll be an interesting one to talk about. All right, moving on. Wagga Blake was thrown up by Danny Wilder, because I think he's kind of transitioning out of the Eagles at the moment. I don't think they're going to re-sign him. There's talk that he's going to go to Super League. And I think he would be a pretty good Union player. I'm not sure he'd be a walk-on starter to the Wallabies, though, at this point in his career. Definitely, when he was a little bit younger, you know, he would have been a great Wallabies player. And I think he probably could still play for the Wallabies, to be honest. But, yeah, definitely a winger, outside centre. That would be an interesting one to see, because I think Wagga Blake, he kind of reminds me of Curtis Rona in terms of how I think his transition would go. I think that, you know, he probably doesn't have like the nuances of a kicking game that you would need for Union, but I think someone like Curtis Rona, like, he was just so good at running the ball, especially in a Union background, which is why those league players transition so well, because they're just so much more athletic than Union outside backs. And that's just, you know, I think that's just the histories have shown that, and why someone like Eddie Jones is so keen to get someone like Sir Leite to Union. So I think that he could make it, but I think it's a little bit late in his career to make as much of an impact as he could have when he was a little bit younger. And then I just thought, I heard a little bit of news today that Isaiah Coutoir wants to play for the All Blacks, which I thought was, you know, probably not something you want to hear if you're a Dolphins fan, considering he just made his debut. But, you know, I think he could be a great player in Union. I honestly can't say I've seen as much as him as I've seen of someone like Nathan Cleary or Matt Barton, so it'd be interesting to see if he could make the transition to Union. But, you know, I'm sure the All Blacks would be keen, because he's got a lot of pedigree around him. So that's it for my little Union chat. Sorry, I don't often get the chance to talk a lot of Union, because, you know, as we said, Zach hates the sport. So yeah, let me know if you've enjoyed that little spiel about Union. Obviously, with the Lions coming up next in 2025, and, you know, the Rugby Championship's coming up soon, I'm very keen to keep talking about it. So let me know, and with some feedback on Instagram, if you're also keen on us going over Union, and I'll try my best to force Rutkin and Zach's hands, and hopefully we get through it. And in terms of other news, not a lot in terms of off-field stuff. As I said before, it was a cracking week of football, which kind of dominated the headlines, which is great to see, because I think although off-field drama and contract drama, it is interesting. I think when the footy is doing the talking for the product of the game, I think that's a good sign. But nonetheless, I think that it's there are some things to talk about. So Jack Whiting, apparently, is the Raiders have offered him a new contract. The deal is $4.4 million for 4 years, so $1.1 million a year. And I think this probably sums up or kind of confirms to me that Jack Whiting's probably going to stay in Canberra. I think that when he announced that he wasn't going to take up his $1 million option, I think that kind of sent shockwaves to other NRL teams, just purely because they didn't see it coming. I think everyone thought he was going to take up that option, and it didn't look like there was a clear fit in terms of a team that could afford to pay him like around that $1 million mark, but then also be a chance of winning a premiership, which is something that Jack Whiting really wants to do, because he was really talking about the regular kind of clubs that are always involved in these kind of things when a big money player comes on market, like, you know, your West Tigers, your Dolphins, you know, other teams like that. So yeah, those teams, like, I could see him in a Dolphins jersey, but, you know, could you say that he's like a step closer to a premiership with the Dolphins? Unfortunately not. As well as they've went so far this season. So yeah, so good on Jack Whiting getting that money, 4 year deal. So he's kind of secured himself. I'm sure the Raiders fans will be happy he's not leaving, considering how much they suck without him against the Penrith Panthers, sorry. So yeah, good for him. And then just on that game real quick, I just have to talk about it a little bit. I mean, as soon as Ivan Cleary makes like the smallest comment about the weak gutted dog incident last week. You've got Paul Kent on retainer for Ricky Stewart, just pleading his case about why the Penrith Panthers are just, you know, a muck of an organisation. And, you know, it's just so interesting because, you know, Ivan Cleary, he obviously he's a very successful coach and he's won a lot, but he's also had, you know, like he does like a little bit of a sly, aggressive comment every now and again. I think you guys will remember when he waved at all the West Tigers fans. And I don't really remember Paul Kent having a huge problem with it. So, I don't know. I just thought in Australian sport is when you win, like everything goes, like everything is justified. The ends justify the means within a reasonable limitation. But it's just so interesting to see, you know, like Paul Kent, obviously Ricky Stewart's mate, defend him on this because, you know, the Penrith Panthers, you know, they win a lot. They're reigning premiers and they can carry on like this. And obviously when they lose themselves, they're going to cop it as well. And that's just the way it is when you kind of give it out. You kind of needed to be able to take it as well, to be honest. And, you know, it's fair play. So I didn't really have a huge comment with the Ivan Cleary comments about Jaden Salmon. You know, good on them. They won the game. They get to talk the trash. And hopefully the next time these two teams play, there's a little bit more spice to it. So in terms of that, I think that it's time to go to player of the round. Obviously, it was a cracking weekend of football. It's kind of tough to pick out one particular player, but I must say that I was just really impressed with the Melbourne Storm against the South Sydney Rabbitohs on the weekend. I thought that the Bunnies were specialists to win this game because it looked like, although Melbourne were pretty good the last few weeks, it didn't really look like they're gonna be contenders for anyone, and they just completely were wrong. We were completely wrong, in terms of them against a team like the Bunnies, and they just looked like a really good unit. And I think my player of the match is going to be Josh King, from the Melbourne Storm. I think he's a bit of a left field person, but I just think that he's a classic example of someone who was a little bit lost at the Newcastle Knights and has just went on to be absolutely amazing at the Melbourne Storm. I don't know what they do to these guys down there, but whatever it is definitely working. And can the Tigers please steal some of it, please? Because, you know, he had a try, two tackle breaks, 133 metres, but then also 52 tackles as well. Just an absolute machine. And this is someone who was a borderline first grader at the Knights. It wasn't like he was an Origin level star. Like, he was someone who was a fringe first grader. And he goes to the Knights and he just looks like someone who could play Origin, to be honest. I mean, his stats were really incredible from the game. I think he had 52 tackles. He made over 100 metres, 133 metres for 13 runs. He had a try. He just looked like the prototypical Melbourne Storm player, and it's just amazing. And then, you know, you look at other examples, like Nicol Hynes is a great one. You know, he came from the Sunshine Coast Falcons on a training trial contract for the Melbourne Storm, and now he's a Dalian Player of the Year. He looks like one of the best halfbacks. He may even play Origin this year. And then someone like Scott Drinkwater as well. He's one of the elite fullbacks in the game at the moment. And, you know, I think it's just a great credit to the Melbourne Storm culture that we all talk about, and everyone likes to write them off every year. But I think even though they're not, in my opinion, at the level of someone like the Penrith Panthers or South Sydney Rabbitohs, or maybe even the Sydney Roosters, story, but they'll always be in the hunt because of that culture. And I just think that's so admirable. All right, moving on to my tips for round six of the NRL. So Thursday night, the Melbourne Storm are playing the Sydney Roosters. Now, this one's a very interesting one because no James Tedesco. He's been stood down for, I think, 11 days because of the new concussion protocols, because it was a grade one concussion. So he will be out. I think Joseph Manu has been named fullback to replace him. So that's going to be really interesting to see. Zach sent me his tips as well. So I'm going to go the Melbourne Storm for this one, just purely because it's at home and they showed they were really good against the Rabbitohs. So I'm going to go the Storm. But this one, I think, is my like most 50-50 option at the moment. And Zach's also tipped the Storm. So next game, that Good Friday famous game between the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs and the South Sydney Rabbitohs at Acorn Stadium. I think I read a stat that the Bulldogs have 11 unavailable players at the moment. Keke obviously had a concussion at training. You know, they just look like they don't really have a full strength team. Tevita Panga Jr., I heard that he's back training with the team, but I'm not sure if he's been named. Let's have a look. No, it doesn't appear like he's been named in the team. So, you know, they look a little bit thin. So I'm going to tip the Bunnies there. And surprise, surprise, Zach has also tipped the Bunnies. Next game, Cowboys v Dolphins. I think I'm going to go with the Cowboys in this one. I think, obviously, a bad loss against the Bulldogs last week. I think they'll bounce back. Zach agrees with me. The Penrith Panthers v the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles. And as much as I really rate Sea Eagles this year, I think that I'm going to go with the Penrith Panthers for obvious reasons. And then Brisbane Broncos, Canberra Raiders. I think the Broncos are just too hot right now. I think they're going to probably put a bit of a score on the Raiders, in my opinion. So, yeah, I'm going to tip the Broncos. And Zach agrees with me. Next game, very interesting because these two teams played each other in round two. So the Gold Coast Titans v the St. George Illawarra Dragons. And although the Dragons got the W last game, it's interesting because it's at Cbus, and the Gold Coast Titans are $1.71 favourites at the moment, and the Dragons are $2.15. Now this is an interesting one because I actually see a little bit of value for the Dragons here, to be honest, because they did beat the Titans last time they played, even though it's at home. He's went for the Titans, but I think I'm going to go the other way. I think I'm going to go for the Dragons here. And then the Newcastle Knights and the New Zealand Warriors. I think this is also a tough one. I think that I was leaning a little bit towards the Knights at the start of that today, but I think I'm going to change my mind and go for the Warriors just purely because they're defending really well. Well, obviously, you know, like besides last week, but then they managed to have that amazing comeback. And I think Sean Johnson is having a little bit of a renaissance at the moment. So I'm going to ride that with the Warriors because as soon as Caelan Ponga comes back for the Knights, we could see them going on a bit of a run as well. But yeah, I think I'm going to go to the Knights here slightly. I think it's going to be a close game. And then obviously that famous Easter Monday game between the West Tigers and the Parramatta Eels. And unfortunately for me, I'm going to have to go for the Eels here because I don't see lightning striking twice. I think last year we were incredibly lucky and fortunate to get a lot of things go away in terms of the Eels game last year that I don't think are going to happen this year. So, fortunately for the Tigers, I'm going to tip them to be 0-6. And I think that will do it for this episode. Thank you everyone so much for listening. We greatly appreciate it. Hopefully I'll get the boys back next week. I think Rutkin might be on a little bit of a hiatus for the next 2 weeks, but I need to double check that. But hopefully we can at least get Zach back and he can tell us just about how good another South Sydney win was, because as we all know, I love to sit there and talk about how other teams are good and my team just seems to be in perpetual mediocrity, which is great. Who doesn't love that to start a week? So thank you everyone for listening, and fins up.